Welcome to today's episode. Today we have Kathy Chavez joining us. Hey, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm fantastic. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. For those of you out there that are listening, Dr. Chavez is a naturopath here at Chicago at a center called the Raby Center. And I've had the good fortune of being her patient. She's done miracles with my life. And literally, I've sent everybody to her, my clients, my friends. It's amazing what she's got going on. And we're going to dive into that because I know it could be really helpful for you. So thanks again for coming on today. I wanted to start today's program by explaining to everybody what an ND, a naturopath, really is, because I had no idea. Can you explain that? Because I can't tell you how many people, when I mention you and what you do and how amazing it is, that they actually don't know what that is.
Yes, and I feel like I tell people what a naturopath is at least once a day and sometimes 10 times a day. Your friends are not alone. So naturopaths we're only licensed in 18 states currently, and Illinois is not one of them. So there aren't that many naturopaths here. So not a lot of people have heard of them. So what a naturopath is we're doctors. We go to 4 years of naturopathic medical school, and we're trained to be primary care physicians. So the states that we're licensed in, we're primary care physicians. What's different about naturopaths is that the approach to medicine is to look for the cause of why somebody is having an illness to begin with. And often that ends up being diet and lifestyle. But so that's always our goal. So when you come to see a naturopath, we usually take a very thorough intake. We want to hear about sleep and bowel movements and diet and family history. We want to really get to the core of what the person's weaknesses are and what could be contributing to that. In the states where we're licensed, we do recommend medications when necessary. And I've always worked with medical doctors in integrative practices. And so, you know, medications are necessary. Surgeries are necessary. These things, you know, if somebody has a disease process that's uncontrolled, these are going to be things that we'll utilize. But almost always, for pretty much every illness that somebody could have, diet and lifestyle can contribute to it. Naturopaths tend to recommend, in addition to diet and lifestyle, we tend to recommend a lot of nutrients. So we do a lot of vitamins and mineral therapies because a lot of people are depleting those because of the changes in our food supply and the changes in the stressors on our bodies and things like that. We use herbal medicine a lot. Herbal medicine I almost use as a step before drugs because people don't have issues because they are lacking in curcumin, just like people don't have high blood pressure because they're lacking a beta block or something like that. But these do act to help when people have issues. So usually I'll focus on nutrients first and then herbal medicine. And then, you know, if somebody needs a medication, I'll refer them to one of my colleagues. But so that's the approach to medicine that naturopaths take.
I love it. So one thing that you touched on was this idea of looking for a cause, right? That you're not just treating symptoms. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means?
Sure. So, you know, I think in the way that most of us are accustomed to medicine being practiced is you wait until there's something wrong. You go to the doctor, your blood pressure is high. They give you a medication. They tell you to lose weight and exercise. Your cholesterol is high. They tell you to lose weight and exercise and they give you a medication. So, you know, a lot of how our healthcare system has been structured is to wait until people are sick and then usually intervene with a pharmaceutical or something like that to try to manage the symptoms. So as part of the philosophy of a naturopath, it's, you know, sicknesses are kind of are a sign. They're almost a blessing. They're your body telling you that something is not balanced. And so, you know, exploring what that is, I think, is very interesting because if everything is going right with your body, you're not going to have these issues. And so these are a sign to us that there's something not quite right. So I kind of see my job as almost an investigator and like a mystery or something like that, you know, and trying to delve in and get all the clues from the patient as to what could be off. And a lot of times it's very obvious, you know, people aren't sleeping, they're not going to the bathroom, they're not, you know, sometimes it's really obvious and sometimes it's not. I just talked to a patient today who has been eating better than I eat, better than I've ever eaten. You know, she exercises, she has a good life, she, you know, sleeps, she seems to be doing everything right. And she was just diagnosed with breast cancer. So it's, you know, it's not always there are genetic mutations and we live in a toxic world and we have, you know, genetic weaknesses and things like that. So it's not always something that can be identified, but it often, and I would say usually it's much more simple than that. Yeah. And there's a lot of very simple, obvious things that people can do that will give them great benefit. So that's kind of what it means to like look deeper. And again, you want to treat side effects if the side effects are themselves things that could really hurt you. You know, like with hypertension, you know, if your blood pressure is too high for too long, you could have an aneurysm or go into kidney failure. You know, there's some serious side effects of having high blood pressure. So you want to treat the symptom there, but there's reasons why people develop that to begin with.
And this is something that I'm really passionate about because I spent 15 years building a healthcare company, best of practices in chronic diseases. We were working in every state in America. And although we had a great company and we were doing a lot of good work for people with kidney stones in our case, the one thing that really struck me while I was doing this is what you're speaking about. If you have strep throat, you take penicillin, right? That's great. If I break my arm, I get a cast. It's fantastic. I always say that if I was in a 52-car pileup, I would go to Northwestern right away, take me there, no question, because I know they're going to sew me up beautifully and, you know, that's fantastic. But what about all this stuff in the middle, the chronic illnesses? The illnesses that you're speaking of, they cause issues and you come in and you say something to a doctor like, I have a rash, I have chronic fatigue, I just feel down all the time, I can't get out of bed. All these different things that are going on and they don't really have solution for. Although my business did prevention, we really dealt with somebody as they had a disease state. But what about all these other things that are going on? This to me is where you guys just do an amazing job.
Yeah. And I mean, these are the diseases of our age now. You know, we're pretty good at preventing people from dying of infectious diseases, although, you know, there are some of these antibiotic resistant microbes coming up and things like that. But it's, you know, we're pretty good at treating people if they have a gunshot wound. We're pretty good at treating people for all of these, you know, all of these acute illnesses, because that's, again, how our medical system has kind of evolved. I mean, a lot of the great advances in medicines have happened during war times and things like that. So it's these acute things that we're really good at treating, but we're not good at treating these chronic issues. And it's, you know, the entire culture is set up in such a way that it's very difficult for these. I mean, it's impossible, I would say, for it there not to be as many chronic diseases as there are. You know, I'm a naturopath and I talk all day long about health and I sit in a chair for 10 hours a day. I'm sitting in a chair right now. You know, it's my transfer. I have a car. I drive in the car. When I'm on the train, I sit in the chair. You know, it's people don't have time to eat. People, you know, there's a lot of people eat all of their meals at fast food restaurants or other convenience foods. You know, the way that we treat the animals that we eat, the way that we treat the crops that we eat, you know, it's there's so many cultural things that have made it impossible for these chronic diseases not to be occurring and for those not to be, you know, the leading causes of death in our country. So it's the chronic diseases that are now the problem. And unfortunately, just medicating them will stave off death, but it's not going to resolve the issue.
And what I love is that you have a set of tests from running neurotransmitter tests to food sensitivity tests. I've probably only been exposed to a handful of them, but really deep testing in your nutritional panel. You know, I was in the lab industry. I never saw anything that went as deep as that. The basic stuff that gets run at a doctor is great, but I find it fascinating that physicians in America really never took nutrition classes. They don't go to that next level of understanding what's going on in our body with these deeper nutritional panels. So they just don't know what to do with the stuff that you're talking about. And so what are the kinds of tests that you run and what would be different than going to a primary care doctor? And how is that helpful to people with the things that you're discussing today?
Well, we run lots and lots of different tests that aren't run at regular doctor's office. And a lot of them, you know, well, all of them are evidence-based. So, for instance, we do this test from a company called Boston Heart, and it's looking at cholesterol in great detail. And I'm not sure why every doctor's office isn't using it, because it's all evidence-based, and it really makes it very clear why people have issues with their cholesterol. So, you know, when you get a regular cholesterol test at your doctor's office, it's just weighing your cholesterol particles. This test actually looks at your cholesterol particles. So you could have two people who both have, you know, say a 94 LDL cholesterol. if one of those people could be at risk for heart disease because they have lots of little cholesterol particles, it just weighs 94. Whereas another person who has a 94 LDL could have a few big cholesterol particles, and so they're not at risk for heart disease. But, you know, the same test that we do, it also looks at inflammatory markers in the arteries. It looks at how much cholesterol people make in their liver, how much cholesterol they absorb from their digestive tract. It looks at a bunch of genetic markers that can contribute to heart disease. One of them is called methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase.
Come on. Could we just stop there for a second? How did you learn how to say that? This is why I would have never made it through science or medicine in my life. I would die.
No, it's like, how do people learn to speak French? They practice it over and over again. If you say the same word a lot of times, it's not hard.
That's
anymore.
Right. That's right. You know, I failed.
I impressed you with that.
No. I failed my language class as well, so that would explain a lot, but go ahead.
But so this is a gene that makes an enzyme, and this enzyme methylates folic acid. It turns folate into methylated folate, and about 50% of the population has a mutation in this gene. And if you do, you don't methylate folate well, and you can't break down homocysteine well. Elevated levels of homocysteine are a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. This same test looks at fatty acids, EPA, ALA, DHA, saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, trans fats. And so it just becomes very clear where someone's weakness is. Somebody's problem might not be that they make a lot of cholesterol, so then a statin drug might not be the best choice for them. Somebody's problem might be that they absorb tons of cholesterol and they really need to focus on fiber, and they don't have enough EPA and DHA, so they need to eat a ton of salmon. So it just makes it much easier to know exactly what's going to have the biggest impact, and then other things that might not be as important. And this is the way medicine is going. You know, now that we've mapped out the human genome, they can tell where people's weaknesses are. Another test that we do, it's called the Genomine test, and it's a test that we use for people who have anxiety or depression or things like that. And it looks at a lot of mutations in, you know, serotonin transporter protein, serotonin receptors, dopamine receptors, calcium channel receptors. Then it also looks at a lot of CYP mutations, which are involved with the metabolism of your drugs in your gut or your liver. And then it lists out all the different psych meds and says which ones people would tolerate better, which ones would be most effective, and which ones wouldn't be, and why. So there's so many things that we can utilize to really help personalize medicine and choose therapies for patients that are going to have the most impact and the least amount of side effects. And
right,
so
that's the goal, right? It's to work with Western medicine. So if somebody comes in and they're on drugs for maybe depression or anxiety or high blood pressure, in the case that you're talking about, you work with that, but then the question is, what's actually going on? What's underlying? What's the underlying cause for this? And then how do we supplement? How do we do something like just eating more salmon or adding some greens into slowly getting the person back into health? They can come off medicines and not spend a lifetime on them for a lot of reasons, one of which is the drugs do have secondary issues with them, right?
Yes. And, you know, I have been telling this to a lot of patients, but I had this one patient who recently came back for her, well, I guess it was 2 follow-up tests, but she was low when we did that fancy cholesterol test I was just talking about earlier. She was low in ALA, which is an omega-3 fatty acid from plants. So chia seeds and flax seeds and walnuts are good sources of ALA. And so I said, I gave her this recipe for chia seed pudding. I don't know if you've ever had it, but it's basically chia seeds with, you know, coconut milk or almond milk or something like that. And you put it in the refrigerator and it makes a pudding. It's the easiest thing ever. And then she put walnuts in it and some flax seeds in it. And she ate it every day for 3 months. And then we retested it. And she went from being severely depleted in ALA to in the highest category just by having this tasty, delicious dessert. You know, I mean, so it's sometimes it's if you know what your weaknesses are, making some very simple directed changes can actually make a huge impact. Plus, chia seeds have a ton of fiber. So, you know, she had kind of been chronically constipated and she no longer was, which is probably going to prevent lots of other problems. So I often tell people, you know, if they say, what is a naturopath? And I say, we are doctors of the obvious, you know, we tell people like the most obvious things, but you know, obvious things are obvious because they work. So if you need ALA, seed pudding will help.
And also you are really dealing with the stuff that, as much as I love Western medicine, and as we said, there's a big role for it, all the other stuff that you talk to them about, they call that stuff psychosomatic half the time, right? So when clients come in and they have real issues, the doctors say it's psychosomatic. So you're helping people with that stuff. It's not psychosomatic if you're having a stomach issue or rashes or emotional ups and downs all the time. It's your body's intelligence telling you something's going on.
And, you know, psychosomatic, I mean, I think that in our culture of medicine, we have often wanted to separate, you know, thank you, Descartes, but we've often wanted to separate the brain from the rest of the body.
Great point.
And the brain is a big part of the body. And, you know, for instance, like stomach upsets where they can't find anything going on and they say it's psychosomatic. Yes, it's probably very much psychosomatic. It's probably, you know, 80% of your serotonin receptors are in your GI tract. And so if you're low in serotonin, you know, you're going to have digestive issues and you're probably going to be sad.
Right.
So it's, you know, our central nervous system and our body are intimately connected. There's really no separation between them, even though, you know, we very much still think of it as different entities.
No, I love that you said that because that's one of those things that I think most of us have been trained into thinking what's going on in our head has nothing to do with our bodies and our bodies have nothing to do with our head, right? We have a neck and it's all connected, right?
Yeah.
So another question for you is people who have anxiety, depression, they're on these different drugs. There's so many studies showing that it does help to a certain subset of people to both be on those drugs. And, you know, I know you agree that sometimes they're helpful, but you guys also work in the neurotransmitter space.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I find this fascinating.
Yeah. So in addition to doing this genetic test, we do a lot of neurotransmitter testing. I think it might be one of my favorite tests. But so the neurotransmitter, you can test the synaptic levels of your neurotransmitters through a urine test.
And so people who don't know, a neurotransmitter is what?
A neurotransmitter is how your neurons or your nerve cells communicate with each other. So, you know, an electrical conduction comes down one neuron. When you get to the synapse, which is the space between the two neurons, you secrete these little molecules, these little neurotransmitters. They go into the synapse and then they stimulate receptors on the next neuron and then you reabsorb them. So if you want to balance between the inhibitory and the excitatory neurotransmitters. If your excitatory are too high or your inhibitory are too low, or you've got some combination of those two being off, your neurons can fire more frequently. And then people feel anxious or they have more pain or more headaches, or they can't shut their brain down, or they can't focus, or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so the neurotransmitters that we test for, and, you know, I'm sure people have heard of serotonin. Most people know that one. Serotonin and GABA are the inhibitory neurotransmitters. And then the excitatory neurotransmitters are glutamate, dopamine, phenylethylalanine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine. So those are all the ones that we test for. And, you know, I like doing the test because when people come in and present a certain way, you know, I was talking about serotonin earlier. Somebody gets diarrhea when they're nervous, they have terrible PMS, they cry, you know, too much and, you know, beat themselves up. I think, okay, maybe they're going to be low serotonin. But now that we have this test, I find that my guesses are wrong. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, patterns and research and things like that are great and helpful, but it's not as helpful as just seeing the labs. So, you know, because then you actually know what the person's weakness is. Because, you know, people can present very similarly and have very different neurotransmitters. And I've seen people who have great coping mechanisms. And I think there's probably not going to be much wrong with their neurotransmitters. And then they come back and you think, oh, my Lord, how is this person getting out of bed? But they meditate and they jog and they have a supportive family and they eat well and they have all these great coping mechanisms. So that's one of the reasons why I like to just have some data.
That's a great point. As you know, I do coaching and my work is around the idea that the thoughts in our heads and how they impact how we view the world and ultimately how we feel about ourselves. But I've found I have sent as you know, a lot of my clients to you and friends, because at some point, like you said, you can have all this great meditation. We can work on the thoughts that are going on in your mind. But if something's really off, and I mean off in a physical depletion way, I loved how you explained it to me once that like everybody knows that if we're low in vitamin D, your body's deficient. We have to take vitamin D. We've all heard about the vitamin D story. But you can also be depleted or deficient in neurotransmitters, right? You're not just off because of the thoughts in your head. You can't stop spinning or your mind is just depleted and you feel tired and you have to bring up those levels.
Yeah. And the nice thing about doing the natural treatments is that if you increase things or you know, like if you have that mutation in that methyl tetrahydrofolate.
You just wanted to say that one again, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. I wanted to impress you again. But just giving somebody a little bit of folic acid, they start being able to, you know, methylated folate is important for making neurotransmitters as well. So people start to be able to start making their neurotransmitters on their own. You know, it's if somebody is low in GABA and you give them GABA, they start, the more GABA they take, the less they need because they actually start building up their stores. So that's the nice thing about natural treatments is usually the more you take, the less you need, rather than with some pharmaceuticals, you know, the more you take, the more you need, or you need to stay on them or something like that.
Isn't it really the difference between putting a Band-Aid on something and letting it actually heal? I mean, what is the most skeptical thing that you hear? You have clients coming in all day long. You mentioned that everything you do is evidence-based medicine. What is the biggest concern that people have in not wanting to give this a try? Is it because it's not evidence-based? What's the biggest pushback?
Well, the comment that, as you were asking the question, kept jumping into my head that I've heard over and over and over and over again is people will say, oh, I don't believe in that. And I think, well, yeah. this isn't a belief system. It's reality. It's just how the body works. Like, we know that the food that you eat affects your body. Like, we know that exercise affects your body. We know that fatty acids are important for making cell membranes and for receptors working properly and for reducing, you know, causing an anti-inflammatory cascade. These things are known. And so I think a lot of people, when they come to a naturopath, you know, and even a lot of medical doctors, you know, even I've been to integrative conferences I was at this integrative oncology conference. I work with a lot of cancer patients, and one of the doctors was talking about lung cancer and curcumin and an herb, turmeric. And he was saying that there's no evidence. And I was thinking, what is he talking about? And so I went on PubMed and I there are thousands of articles. And so I grabbed him afterwards and I said, because I'm not a PhD, you know, and I know that some studies are better than others. And that's, I mean, there were thousands, but so I went up to him and I was like, you know, I'm just curious. You said there was no data, you know, on PubMed, you know, and just looking at human studies, like there's all these human study trials. And he just kept repeating, there's not any evidence. There's not any evidence. And I was like, what? Yeah. Am I going crazy here? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
But so I think there's a bias against these common sense things, you know, like I've had so many doctor, you know, heard from patients, so many, you know, who have diabetes or kidney failure or cancer or things like that. And they'll say that their doctor just said that they can, well, with kidney failure, there's usually a lot more education. So I'm going to take that one back. Almost every kidney failure patient has been talked to about, you know, diet, but for a lot of diet associated diseases, like in the literature, very clearly associated with diet, patients will ask and their doctors will just say, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, take the medications and it doesn't really matter, or something like that. Like that happens a lot, and it does matter. And the data is out there. I think it's just,
but they haven't taken any nutrition classes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's that bias just in our culture in general, that how we live doesn't affect our health. And so people think it's hokey. They think it's nonsense. They think it's hippie talk. I don't know. But I hear that a lot. People will say, I don't believe in that. And again, it's really not a belief system. There's lots and lots and lots of data out there.
Well, and as one data point, I can tell you, I've worked with the best doctors who have developed the standard of care in different disease states. These were physicians that were put on panels to create the standard of care for a particular disease in Western medicine, and they don't all agree with each other. I feel like this is the secret that nobody knows about for each disease. how it decide, like we decide which treatment patterns it's going to be or which ones it's not. It's more like watching Congress or something and watching a bill get passed than people realize. There's a lot of differing views out there. And what I found is the loudest, most aggressive person ended up getting their agenda pushed through. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was the right solution for that. It's just that, you know, these doctors aggressively argue about these standard of care practices. And it's a shame because I think that there's not really like a clear answer. If you think logically, we're eating all day long and it has to affect our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does.
So integrative medicine has taken off. You go to most major universities and there's an integrative approach. Do you feel that this is really changing?
Yes, I really, really do. And I'm really pleased. I mean, I'm in a little biased. I'm in a little bit of a sheltered world because, again, I work in integrative practice. The medical doctors that I work with are very interested in integrative medicine. Those tend to be the people that I end up seeing and talking to, but there's just so much more interest. Our gynecologist, Dr. Thurr, helps with the educational program for the OBGYN residents at Northwestern, and she's had all of us come in and talk to them about stress management or aromatherapy, or a lot of it is stress management. They're really stressed out. They work a lot. And, you know, there's lots of medical programs that are starting to have options for diet and acupuncture and things like that. So I think it's really changing because I think it's become, you know, so very obvious that the way that we've been doing things is not working, that I think that young, excited, intelligent people are, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious to them. I also think that a lot of the debate, you know, with healthcare in our country and how much healthcare costs and the toll that that's paying on our economy, I think has brought that into the forefront too. Like we spend a lot of money on medicine and we are, as far as other industrialized nations go, we are pretty low in the rankings of health, you know, even life expectancy. Yeah. And we spend a lot more money than any other country at all. So I think it's just becoming more apparent that all of these approaches don't necessarily mean health. And then if all of the money that we spend on healthcare doesn't mean health, what does? And, you know, I think it's the pendulum is swinging back and people are starting to realize that how we're living affects our health.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest thing that I learned was that a lot of medicine is actually crisis care, crisis intervention. It's not preventative. We're just going when things are absolutely acute. We wait until there's an acute medical issue before we deal with our health. I'm hoping other people do this, but I actually now call you when there's the smallest thing going on in my body. You know, I just feel a little tired or something because I know that my body is telling me that there's something that has to happen that's arising.
Yeah. And that's one of my, I worked at Cancer Treatment Centers of America before I joined the Raby Institute. And I loved that. And I love working with cancer patients, but I love working at the Raby Institute because so much of what I do there is, I'd say 50% of my practice, and I'm not kidding, is weight management. Even if people came in for something else, weight management comes up constantly. We do some group visits for weight management. We have all sorts of programs for weight management because it really requires a lot of lifestyle changes that are difficult. And it's, you know, it's long term, lots of hand holding, but helping people manage their weight, which for most people, it's more of a cosmetic issue almost, you know, they come in and they don't feel good because their pants don't fit or whatever, which is fine. You know, vanity is a good motivator, but obesity or being overweight contributes to so many of these chronic diseases. And, you know, again, I worked in oncology. Being overweight contributes to a lot of the most common cancers. So it's wonderful. I really like being in a place where we're working on things while they're still more of a cosmetic issue because when people come in because their pants don't fit or because they're having muscle cramps or because, you know, they are not sleeping as well, that's the first sign that something is off. And if you can address that when it's just the first sign, you're not going to get to a diagnosis of something. So it's, I love patients who come in for little things, you know, that are just, they just started noticing, because that's when you want to deal with something.
Well, it's true. Preventative care, right?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So everyone who comes on the show, we discuss the idea of authenticity. I'm very interested in your view, since you're coming at life from a very different lens at looking at health and wellness all day long. So what does an authentic life mean to you?
So, you know, when we were talking offline before we started the interview, I was telling you how much I enjoyed that question, just thinking about it throughout the day. So that's a great question. I feel like we could talk about that forever. I probably should have jotted down a summary because there's so many things that I feel like you could say. But to have an authentic life, and I think we all struggle with that. And I think that's probably one of the purposes of being alive almost, you know, I think that the struggle or using that as a barometer, I think is kind of the point of being alive. So, you know, when I was a little girl, I was very religious. I would like read the Bible all the time and I would like write sermons and I was really into that, you know.
Is that right? I didn't know that about you.
Yes. I would like lecture to nobody. So that was like the first inkling I think that I could think of today when I was thinking like, what is an authentic life? And, you know, I was really, you know, into Jesus, like being honest and helping the person who needed help and, you know, not getting caught up with all the trappings and things like that. Like, I just thought, you know, that I was really interested in that, you know, like really interested in helping the least among us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really, really something that I thought about a lot and felt very passionately about. And as I got older and, you know, whatever, became a punk rocker or whatever, like authentic, you know, that seemed very authentic to me, like, you know, making your own music and dressing the way you wanted to, and, you know, things that young people are interested, you know, that are important to young people. And that seemed very authentic. And then I found naturopathic medicine, you know, which felt very, very authentic, you know, like what is really the cause? Like, how can you really help people? You know, so that felt very authentic to me. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, authenticity has been, you know, guides have been, what relationships are supportive of me? What relationships, you know, help me grow as a person rather than, you know, bring me down or make me feel insecure or things like that. So looking for authenticity in like my surroundings, like what kind of environment helps me to feel good about myself and to push myself to things I want? And when am I in situations where I feel insecure or weird, or I said things that I didn't feel comfortable with and I don't know why I said them, but there was like peer pressure or something, I don't know, something weird that threw me off and made me feel like I was betraying
who
I was. Yes, inauthentic. And, you know, I feel really blessed because being a naturopath and having the job that I do and just sitting and talking to people all day, it's just rife for opportunity to be authentic because, you know, people are telling you their worries and their deepest, darkest secrets and about their bowel movements and their parents and, you know, and you're listening and trying to help them to figure things out. And it's really wonderful. And it's a real blessing that I get to do that every day because you can't help but to, you know, be very honest with people because they're being very honest with you. And, you know, listening to them, you have to be honest with yourself too, because I think sometimes we get into our own heads and I get into my own head and I'll be very critical of this, or I'll think this is a real problem, or I didn't do this right or something like that. But when you're sitting with people and you're hearing them be human too, you know, you can't help but to be more gentle with yourself for being human and be compassionate with yourself, because you can't help but be compassionate with these other people who are struggling with things that, you know, when you hear it from other people, it seems very human, but then that allows you to be more compassionate with yourself and allow yourself to be who you are more so than I think I would be if I wasn't doing that all day long. You know, it's much easier to be supportive of yourself and who you are when you're surrounded by other people who are being who they are.
Vulnerable and open like that.
Yeah, I think my job has allowed, it's impossible not to be authentic when you're listening to people with their own pain and their own struggles and their own defenses and things like that. Just having that in front of your face all day long really helps, I think. Helps me to keep on track.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. I love that. So you mentioned starting with following Jesus, and I'm learning that so many great things about you today. I love this. Then punk rock, then coming into naturopath medicine. It sounds like your path was one that evolved over time.
Yes. And those were just the things that popped into my head. There have been many other paths, but those, I don't know, that seemed to work. So,
but you never had a turning point moment. It was sort of something that has been evolving, an evolution of self.
Yeah. And I've always been a bit of a rebel in my family. I was, you know, I got sent away and all that. Like I was, so trying to be authentic and trying to be myself and being very adamant about that, I think was part of my personality from, you know, my mom says from when I was like 2 years old. So I think that was always kind of my style.
I love that.
And so I can't think of any particular turning point. I've always had a little bit of a, you know, rebellious, I grew up in a very working class family and a very working class neighborhood in New York. And so I always was kind of, you know, I didn't fit in. I was kind of bookish and sensitive and it was a very macho, mm-hmm. you know, lots of cops and firemen, you know, and New York, Long Island, you know, you can imagine, you know, people have seen the reality shows, but so, and I was like, you know, crying and sensitive and, you know, so I, you know, reading books and, you know, stuff like that. So I think that probably was the biggest motivator possibly, is that I felt different from an early age. So I think I was always looking for something else.
And when you're stressed out and facing difficulties, how do you stop yourself from making choices that are deeply inauthentic or out of line with your integrity or deeper self?
Well, I think my relationships have always been my coping mechanism. So now it would be my husband. You know, in the past, it's been other friends or boyfriends or family members or things like that. So that's kind of my coping mechanism, is the relationships in my life.
Yeah. Turning to people at those moments, right?
Yeah.
So the last question, you work in this space, you've mentioned acupuncture, all these different things. I'm dying to know, what are your daily habits, practices that keep a life that's successful and meaningful to you? Do you meditate every day? Do you keep journals? What do you do to stay aligned?
So to stay aligned, for me, it's eating, sleeping, spending time with my husband. Like those are the things that ground me. I meditate more as needed. It's not part of my routine. Physical activity, taking walks, being in nature, these are all things that I like to do and that I do as much as I can, but they're not kind of part of my daily routine. For me, it's if I drink water, eat frequently, get enough sleep, and then have bonding time with my husband. Those are the things that I do on a regular basis. And if I don't, I feel it.
And I'm assuming you've taken all the tests on yourself, and so all of your numbers are aligned, and you probably don't need that much.
Not all of my numbers are aligned, but they're pretty good. I have a pretty good diet and supplement regimen going down, but I definitely have weaknesses. And those are things that I'm always working on.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on today's show. And if people are interested in following up with you, if they live in Chicago, where can they find you? And if they're not in Chicago, where can they go if they're interested in integrative health and finding a naturopath?
So the Raby Institute is where I practice. And so we have a website, we have a phone number. People are welcome to contact us and schedule anytime. We also do phone appointments. I just saw a patient today who has cancer from Massachusetts. So if people don't live in Chicago, we do phone appointments as well. So they can just check out the website, rabyinstitute.com. And I'm there. My bio is there. You can make appointments online or call the office.
And you've got a great new metabolic makeover coming up. Can you explain what that is real quick?
Yes. So this is one of the group visits that we do for anybody with metabolic syndrome. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of what I do is weight management. And so anybody who's looking to lose weight, anybody who has high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or high blood sugar are welcome to join the group. And it's a 6-week group. And we kind of go through what is occurring actually in your body when you have metabolic syndrome, which is all of those symptoms, and what you can do to change it. So, you know, I had this patient who
you know, I saw her privately after she had gone through the group. And I said, what did you think of the group? You know, did you enjoy it? Any feedback? And she, her feedback, and this doesn't sound like a great selling point, but her feedback was, well, I knew a lot of the information and some of the people in the group were really annoying, but I did great and I really got a lot out of it and I've lost a lot of weight and I'm off my blood pressure medication or whatever. So it's funny, but you know, groups can be annoying and they can be, and you know, a lot of the information, as I said, I'm kind of the doctor of the obvious. I mean, I feel like people do learn some new things, but I think the benefit of being in a group visit, and studies show that people who do group visits tend to make longer lasting lifestyle changes. So that's why we do them. But there's something that happens when you're in a group, even if people are annoying and you already know all the information, that really helps people to stick on track with the changes that they're trying to make. So we've gotten really, really excellent results with the previous groups that we've done. And again, I think it's something about coming in there, having to think about who you are and what you want and how you can go about and get it, and hearing people's stories and what they struggled with and what worked for them, and knowing that you're not the only one who suffers from this, and knowing that there's reasons why this has happened and there's things that you can do to change it. And once you change your habits, it's not that big of a deal and you just do it automatically. So I think the group visits are one of the best ways for people to make a lot of these lifestyle changes, because it's, once you make the lifestyle changes, it doesn't seem hard, but making those changes is very challenging for a lot of people because we're just such creatures of habit.
I love it. And I just want to say thank you so much for all the work you do. You've changed my life. You've changed a lot of my clients' lives that I've sent over to you. You know, what you're doing is so meaningful. And I definitely feel that this is the future of medicine, where everyone's going and you are just changing lives. So thank you. I appreciate everything. And I thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. That's so kind. Thank you.